The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson and Barton Simmons. It's your call for the best college football coverage. From National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between, CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Barton Simmons. That's Tom Fornelli. I'm Chip Patterson. And just as anytime you thought that the coaching carousel was done spinning, no, it's still spinning. And this is not going to be a year where everything's going to be clean, as we've now had more than a handful of coaches that leave their current position since the early signing period. Lots to get into. The news of the day, as you know by selecting this podcast from your feed, is that Mel Tucker has been hired as the new head coach at Michigan State. Of course, Mark D'Antonio, he resigned right before the February signing period. And, you know, that this is a search that was very, very public. We've talked about it a little on the podcast. Now, we'll get into what it means for Michigan State, what the fit is like, where Colorado turns next, and the many different other storylines that are packed into this hire. So with the news that Mel Tucker had been hired, it broke late Tuesday night. Like, Tom, when it came across your desk today, because Mel Tucker had already come out on Twitter and said, "I'm flat, quote, flattered by the Michigan State interest, but we have hashtag the build still to do here." So I guess the building's done. Congratulations to Mel Tucker, new Yankee Workshop host. He has finished the building. What was your reaction when you found out that Tucker was going to be hired?
Well, my reaction was, what, huh? What? Because I had literally just woken up.
Okay.
Because, you know, I mean, that's when coaching hires normally happen, is at like 2 a.m. on a Wednesday morning is when things first start breaking. Yeah, I was surprised because, like you said, Mel Tucker had already turned the job down pretty much. And now, you know, after Fickell came and went, now all of a sudden Tucker's back. And so I thought, wow, they're probably paying him a lot of money. And according to Bruce Feldman, that's exactly what they're going to be doing. They pretty much kind of caved in and gave him everything that he asked for, because he was in a position where he had all the leverage, which kind of goes to what we've talked about on the last podcast and what we talked about last week too, about, you know, coaches or schools maybe needing to hire their own agents to go through the hiring process and not getting themselves kind of in a bad position, because this has nothing to do with Mel Tucker. He might be a great coach for Michigan State. Nor am I upset at Mel Tucker for leaving Colorado, even though, you know, there was that tweet going around that he said last year about how there's no transfer portal in the real world. Well, apparently there is. But, I mean, they're doubling his salary from all reports. In fact, more than doubling his salary. And they're throwing everything they have at him to convince him to come. And if this doesn't work, now Michigan State's going to find itself in an even worse position. So where, like we were talking about in the mailbag, how I thought they were at a spot where they should just give Mike Tressel a year as the interim and then try to tackle it from there, see how that goes, and then move on to where you're at a more advantageous bargaining position than you were now. But apparently, I'm guessing that based on the fact that it happened at 2 a.m., which always, you know, everything smart happens at that time of day, the kind of the fallout from Fickell saying no, and then that story in the Free Press about a lot of the reasons behind why Fickell went with the fallout from the Larry Nassar trial and all that kind of stuff, the problems within the Michigan State Athletic Department. A part of me feels like this was more of a, oh my God, we have to do something to get people to stop talking about all this stuff. We need to do something. This is more of a cosmetic hire to me than anything. And again, it's nothing to do with Mel Tucker. It could have been any coach. I just feel like that this was somewhat of a panic move.
What do you think, Barton?
Well, first of all, we are well aware that Mel Tucker is very seductive when he gets in front of you for an interview. You know, we heard all the rumors about Mel Tucker being a great interview before he got hired. Heard the rumors after he got hired. Heard the broadcasters rave about Mel Tucker when they meet with him for the broadcast meetings pregame. Like, Mel Tucker just crushes these settings. And so, look, Mel Tucker, you know, whispered some sex into the ears of the Michigan State brass, and they just couldn't – they couldn't quit him. They couldn't quit Mel Tucker, and they kept going back. But I this hire, though, I mean, it's interesting. It's just interesting to me that, that he was such a guy that they wanted to keep on, you know, pounding at and going after. Like, to me, I jotted this down. Like, this is, to me, an understandable hire. I don't know how you can definitively say it's a good hire, though, because he's only been a head coach 1 year. That year had very mixed reviews at Colorado. They regressed significantly on defense. I know they lost a lot on defense, but they regressed in a big way. 37th in the country in yards per play on defense to 113th. Offensively stagnated. I mean, they weren't great the year before either, but they were significantly – they had fewer points per game by a pretty good chunk. And so, you know, that's the guy that you're just sort of – pounding at over and over and doubling his salary. And, you know, I just, again, I understand why the guy can recruit. He's coached under and with some of the best,
the greats,
coaches in the game.
He's got all the dust. He's got everybody's magic dust on him.
Pick your infatuation, and he's got a little bit of it sprinkled in him. And he's got Michigan State ties. He's, you know, he's sort of, you know, regionally, he can kind of fit wherever you want him and can recruit in that sense too. But in terms of just on the football field, look, it's still a guy who's been a head coach for 1 year and had a 5-7 season. So it's, you know, I think, again, understandable hire, solid hire, but I mean, we'll see.
In our era of championing a Dabo Swinney or an Ed Orgeron, I am less likely to look at lack of head coaching experience as the one thing that's going to keep me from making a hire. I think that this hire was great for Michigan State considering where the search had gotten. I think that if it's going to be Mike Tressel for a year and then get to the next season, see if he's the guy, but then maybe you're also going to make another run at Luke Fickell or a Pat Narduzzi, or maybe see what Mel Tucker does, I think that you were going to have some lost recruiting classes. And I don't know if Mel Tucker is going to be able to prevent that from happening, but just to, you know, like, from Ohio, played at Wisconsin, GA for 2 years under Nick Saban at Michigan State, with D'Antonio at Ohio State when they won a national championship under Jim Tressel, at Alabama for tons of success, then goes with Kirby Smart to Georgia. When he leaves Georgia, he's one of the, you know, top 15 recruiters in the country now, with ties all over the place. His NFL experience, as Chicago Bears superfan Tom Fornelli will tell you, might have some differing takes in terms of, you know, what his X's and O's are. But if we are going to be given chances to coaches who, like, being able to be good in the interview and being able to whisper that sex into the administrator's ears at Michigan State, like, that just might be the fact that you're getting somebody who's just been in the game and kind of understands the way that all the pieces work. I do not think that I'm ready to take a step to say that the hire of Mel Tucker will lead to X number of wins or X number of Big Ten championships at Michigan State. But I do think that you're at least getting somebody who's going to be taking over, knowing the lay of the land in terms of the Big Ten, knowing what it takes in order to run a successful program. The guy's been Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia. Like, you just, he he's probably pitched them on a vision. And according to reporting, what are we also getting? We are getting a doubled salary pool for the assistants. We're getting commitments for more facilities and resources. If he went in there and he like brought out the binder and was like, this is what I think we can take from Georgia. This is what we can take from Alabama. And this is what we can take from Ohio State. Like if that was what won Michigan State over, I'm not going to fault the Michigan State administrators given the position they were in for running up the price to try and get the deal done.
Wait, so you're saying that like the Mark Trussman dust wasn't some of the dust that makes Mel Tucker so attractive?
No. I was thinking more of the Saban, D'Antonio, Jim Tressel, Kirby Smart dust.
Fine.
A lot of dust.
I mean, that's a lot of dust.
It's a lot of dust, but I mean, clearly I think the Trussman dust is what puts it over the top.
I mean, like on the recruiting trail, Barton, this was not just on the defensive side of the ball, but somebody who was really important in building out some top recruiting classes as a staff member of a bunch of those schools.
I mean, yeah, he was, and I don't want to take anything from his recruiting ability, but it's like, again, I think it's clearly Nick Saban thinks he's good. I mean, he's hired him multiple times.
Oh, he was at LSU
Kirby
too.
Smart is good.
Yeah,
he's hired. Yeah, I mean, like that's. So I think that's because those staffs are going to recruit well no matter who is there. So I think you read it not into like, oh, like look at the classes he's brought in, like whatever. Like Kirby Smart's going to bring in and Nick Saban are going to bring in number one classes no matter who their assistant coaches are. I think the more telling element there is that those guys think they're good coaches and they've hired them and rehired them and so and promoted them and all that sort of stuff. And so yeah, I mean that's a big plus. And yet like, and they had some good guys that they landed in year one at Colorado. I didn't think it was some breakthrough class. I didn't think it was some wild new frontier on the recruiting trail for Colorado. So, but I do think that he does bring a competency and probably a new perspective to the recruiting scene at Michigan State that will benefit that program. But ultimately, again, I go back to just sort of the initial, like this is understandable and it's solid.
It's fine.
I will say this as far as the recruiting for Michigan State. I do think that in one sense what he does, because if you look at his first class at Colorado, I mean, it's not like he was recruiting a bunch of Colorado kids. At Colorado, he was able to get a 4-star from Louisiana, a 4-star from Arizona, a 4-star from Texas to come to Colorado. He's got, you know, guys from some JUCO guys, but he's got players from like the Southeast in his class. He's got California players, which you have to have if you're going to compete in the Pac-12. So I think that for Michigan State, which is going up against Ohio State and Michigan in the state of Michigan and in the state of Ohio, where I think a lot of Big Ten teams in that area need to have success, and in the Chicago region, I think maybe having somebody who's probably going to be able to recruit in those spots because he's a good recruiter, but has more access maybe to other areas of the nation that maybe Michigan State wasn't getting a ton of, maybe that helps for them going forward.
I think that it certainly doesn't hurt. All right, so if we consider the hire fine and understandable, the other piece of this is where is your level of outrage, or how do you respond to the outrage regarding the timing of this move, the commitment to the program after the initial interest, but then ultimately going back there? A big piece of this conversation among the college football community, especially, you know, at this point in the offseason when we're talking about changes to transfer rules, you know, they're talking, NCAA is in Washington, D.C., talking to Congress about name, image, likeness, you know, players' rights and coaching salaries. Like, all these things are very much hot offseason topics. And in a way, the Mel Tucker hire, you know, sort of brings in a lot of these factors here. You know, we know that online is, you know, where the outrage just grows. I mean, they've got all kinds of nitrates in the soil of the outrage farm out there on the internet. How outraged are you? I guess, like, Barton, how outraged are you, and how do you respond to it?
It's hard to get me outraged, but what I look, Here's the bottom line. All right. If you're a head coach, just like word of advice, PSA, stop trashing the transfers. Okay. Don't have a soundbite where you trash transfers. Don't have a soundbite where you trash the portal. And if you do, then you better never leave your job. You better be content staying there for as long as you are allowed. Because if you leave, that's going to come back to bite you. And I don't begrudge Mel Tucker for taking a job that is giving him double his salary, doubling his assistant coaching salary, and significantly increasing the resources in the strength and conditioning program. Like those are and it's a program where you probably have more national championship upside. So I don't begrudge Mel Tucker for taking this job, especially when he turned it down one time for what would be assumed was a better deal. It was just, this was too good of a deal to pass up. So look, yeah, go do you, Mel Tucker, but don't say there is no transfer portal in the real world when you just jumped into the transfer portal. And so let's just all get out of this mindset, coaches, that transferring is quitting, because everyone's looking for for their best situation, just like you are. That's all I'm at there. I mean, look, have at it. Just don't shame the kids for it.
Yeah, be mad at the system. Don't be mad at the coach. Be mad that the players that are at Colorado who literally just signed, you know, their LOI last week to go play for him now are finding their coach leaving. That sucks for them. I hope that the NCAA does the right thing and allows them to leave if they so choose to do that, if they want to go find somewhere else. But I can't blame Mel Tucker for this. I mean, if a similar or even in a lot of areas, better job comes open and is like, hey, we like you. We're going to give you more than twice of what you have now. It's really hard to say no to that, no matter the timing. And I don't think that this was one thing where Mel Tucker didn't have any kind of, you know, well, I don't know. Like, he probably thought about it. I don't think this was a just, okay, I'm gone as soon as that offer came in. I think that there's part of him, I think he's obviously clearly leaning that way, but I think there's still a part of him that was like, man, I don't know if this is the right thing to be doing. But when it comes to your life and your family and your well-being, that's a really difficult offer to say no to. Like, Chip, if Ty and Dan come to you and say, leave Cover 3, we're going to pay you twice as much to be on the Solid Verbal with us, you'd have to think about it, right?
And then I'd say no.
That's right, because there is no transfer portal in real life. But anyways. It's just, it's hard. There's so many things that are wrong that really aren't Mel Tucker's fault. Like, it's not, you can't be mad at him for doing it, because nearly everybody, when presented with a similar opportunity in their field of work, would do the exact same thing. It's just, it's a crappy situation, and it puts a lot of people in an awkward situation where now Colorado's in the same spot that Michigan State just was. And hopefully, maybe, you know, they won't be as bent over a barrel as Michigan State was trying to find somebody to replace Mel Tucker, where they go and they get somebody else, and then that puts another school in that position. So it's a vicious cycle, and people get hurt because of it. But I don't think that Mel Tucker should feel any guilt for doing what he's done, nor should I feel that anybody should be piling on Mel Tucker for doing it. I mean, it's life. It's the world. Things happen.
You know who I feel sorry for?
Who?
Me. Because we had the number one player in the country, Antonio Alfano, who was on campus at Alabama for about a month before he was in the transfer portal. And he transfers to Colorado, and like the issue wasn't on the field, it was off the field. So he transfers to Colorado, and Mel Tucker and Jimmy Brumbaugh are there, and they're going to get him straightened out, and he's going to, you know, he's got the right support system in place, and look out, here we come. You know, not a bust anymore. And now Jimmy Brumbaugh takes a job at Tennessee, and Mel Tucker leaves to Michigan State, and now Antonio Alfano is up there in Boulder with no coach and probably a little more free time than he had before. So I'm a little bit I'm back on the concerned bus.
There's a lot of activities in Boulder that will welcome you with open arms if you got free time.
Right.
Do you think part of me thinks that specific to Mel Tucker, as much time as he's spent in coaching, as many different stops as he's had across, I guess if he started as a GA, I mean, it's almost like 20 years as a football coach. I mean, there's got to be some of it too, where you're looking at all the different times that maybe you thought you were ready for a head coaching job, and all the different times that maybe you have interviewed, or maybe your agent has contacted you, and times that it didn't happen, and the Colorado job maybe felt like the first one that you were gonna get, and now all of a sudden you're gonna have an opportunity to go take over not just a Big Ten program, but you know, we talk about it being running fourth in its own division, but it's still a top half of the Big Ten program. Like, I think that for Mel Tucker, you've been in the game long enough, you've seen enough twists and turns, you've changed jobs enough that you just know that this train might not come around to the station again. It might not come around at all. Like, this, it almost feels like the kind of opportunity, the money for sure, but even just the, I don't know if I, Mel Tucker, am going to get another here at Colorado, if I'm going to get another job opportunity like this, and you just got to take it.
Well, that was the irony of this Michigan State situation, was like, Michigan State is a really attractive job, and there's a lot of coaches that would really want that job, but the timing of it just made it just a really tricky sell, and it looked like they missed their, you know, Mel Tucker turned down their pitch initially. And that's understandable too. But, you know, second time around, I guess he got sucked in, and I get it. You know, that's a job you can win at.
Yeah. Like, I think, I mean, again, not knocking Mel Tucker, I think that this could be a very good hire for Michigan State. But I think that if Mark D'Antonio resigned on December 4th instead of February 4th, Mel Tucker doesn't have the Michigan State job right now.
What do you make about the Michigan State? There was some reporting that maybe the timing of Mark D'Antonio stepping down also had to do with sort of the back and forth conversation with the administration, where D'Antonio had one idea of the way the exit plan was going to be set up. Then he caught wind that the administration was already doing some homework, and that's what led to the sudden separation. Do you think that played a role in the timing?
Oh, like, you mean Mark D'Antonio gets pissed off and stubborn about the way things go down, and, you know, doesn't want people to
tell him what to do?
Yeah, tell him what to do. That sounds totally implausible.
That's out of character for Mark D'Antonio. I don't know. He just seems like a malleable, cooperative kind of person.
Right. Very understanding. Yeah.
So,
do you guys want to hear my Mark D'Antonio impression?
Yeah, absolutely.
Spot on.
Yeah, that's incredible. We haven't had a better coach impression on this entire podcast.
That is the best. You could absolutely you could mistake that for Mark D'Antonio without question.
What is what is the Mel Tucker Michigan State ceiling look like?
It's going to depend how he recruits.
It is. Because that's – so you got to kind of be able to recruit – you know, you don't have to jump out the gate and recruit like Ohio State. But you got to be able – I think Michigan State, from a profile standpoint, from a location, resources, whatever, I feel like you should be able to compete with Penn State. And so I think, you know, it's – he's got to. That's what he has to do. I mean, he has to. And again, Colorado doesn't have the same recruiting ceiling, probably. So it's hard to judge him off of what he did at Colorado on the recruiting trail. But no, I think you're right, Tom. Like, I think he's got to get rolling. And we'll see what kind of talents he can bring in on that roster.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy to have. I mean, I know we've the way that things ended with Mark D'Antonio the last few years and how things got stale with that coaching staff and they plateaued or just kind of dropped and then plateaued, it's going to be really difficult for him to have that same kind of run of success. Not even just considering the playoff berth that they had, but I mean, like all those 10 win seasons and competing, you know, for the division titles and winning the division titles and playing for conference titles, that's not going to be easy to do. So if you're looking for that kind of like ceiling, I think it's there. I just don't think it is a likely outcome. I think that what we're looking for is a lot of 8-4 regular seasons, some 9-3s, and then you get a right, you know, the right group together, some enough veteran talent or, you know, experienced players and young talent, and maybe they can get like a 10-11 win season and compete with Ohio State to win a division.
I think the ceiling is to have your best seasons be like to for me to set the bar at going 3-0 against Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan seems too high. And I would love if Mel Tucker exceeded the expectations, because congratulations, Mel Tucker, you did it. You exceeded Chip Patterson's expectations. But I do think
I think a
reasonable expectation is that in your best seasons, you're taking down two of those three. And that most seasons you're trying to at least get one. I think that falling short of expectations and a disappointing ceiling would be Michigan State beats everybody else but can never seem to get a win against the trio of Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan State. If you're delivering at least one win every single year, I think that would be a pretty successful run for however long it goes.
Yeah.
That sounds reasonable.
Silly us being reasonable. Coming up on the other side, where Colorado goes next and whether this says anything about the Pac-12 in general. Next.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Tailored Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Tailored Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Tailored Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account, Tailored Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Tailored Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Tailored Brands.
So there's one big piece in the Colorado coaching search. And it's that Eric Bieniemy, the Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator, is a Colorado legend. He is going to be a sentimental favorite. And as one of the big storylines of the NFL coaching carousel was Eric Bieniemy and where he might be interviewed, where he wasn't interviewed, and all the different jobs that did not end up in the hands of Eric Bieniemy. He's very much on the tip of the tongue for anybody who's an insider within the coaching business. After that, I think things get a little bit more widespread. Barton, how do you see the sort of pieces unfolding here for the Buffs?
Well, so here's where I started, and and sort of trying to figure out where Colorado goes. I tried to pull up some old coaching search stories from the last hire. I mean, we were only a year ago, right? When when Colorado was looking for a head coach, and so it's kind of hard to find some of those at times. But I found one from Ross Dellinger that had Mel Tucker on the list, so you know he was at least sort of in the ballpark. And the other candidates on that list, all right, were Matt Wells, who was at Utah State at the time. That's a no because he's now at Texas Tech. Tosh Lupoi, who was the Alabama DC at the time. That's probably a no because he's now in the NFL. I don't even know where he landed, but he was at the Browns last year. Jim Leavitt, who was, I guess, at the time off the market.
He was a candidate last year for sure.
I know, but where was he a candidate from? Was
he had been the DC at Oregon, but before that he was the DC at Colorado on McIntyre's staff.
Right, but
he had not gotten to
didn't keep him as his DC. Had Cristobal run him out of they parted ways at that point? I guess that maybe that's where we were.
Yeah, and Taggart had not brought him to Florida State yet.
And Taggart never did. I mean, he came to Florida State as a he didn't coach anywhere last year.
Correct.
Until he came in and just sort of looking over the shoulder of Taggart's current DC. And now he's at FAU with Taggart.
Right.
That strikes me as a no right now. I mean, that doesn't seem like the best fit or certainly wouldn't be the sexiest hire. And then Jeff Tedford, he just retired for medical reasons. Bunch of no's. And then the other one on there, Eric Bieniemy. All right. Eric Bieniemy obviously makes a lot of sense because Eric Bieniemy was played at a high level at Colorado.
Won a national title there.
Certainly is a hot name right now because he's the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs who just won a Super Bowl, has coached at Colorado. That said, if I'm Eric Bieniemy, there ain't no chance I'm taking this job. And the reason is look, maybe he does. Maybe Eric Bieniemy has, is drawn to going back to the alma mater and getting that thing rolling again. So, look, there's no reason. I mean, it's certainly not shocking to think he might take it, but they just won a Super Bowl. They're going to have a chance to win a Super Bowl again. I mean, they probably got a chance to win as long as Patrick Mahomes is there. But he could potentially go back to the Super Bowl again next year. And next year, given all the buzz and a lot of sort of the media scrutiny, like why isn't Eric Bieniemy getting considered for these NFL head jobs, I just got to believe he's got an NFL job waiting for him next cycle. So he comes back to Colorado, and the last time he was at Colorado, it was under John Embry, and in 2 years, they won 3 games. All right, so he's already failed at Colorado once. This Colorado team is going to be breaking in a new quarterback, loses a potential first-round draft pick at wide receiver, and has failed to make a bowl each of the last 2 years. Like, it's not going to be an easy job. So this Airbnb hot name right now has the option going to Colorado, getting paid, I don't know, whatever it is, $3 million, and taking a really hard job. And if he fails there for the second time, then where does that leave Eric Bieniemy? Like, whereas he could stick in the NFL and go take that job next year, wherever it is, and he's maybe has success there. If he doesn't, he's right back to being a quality OC in that league. Like, I just think this is not, if I'm sort of mapping out my future as Eric Bieniemy, I just don't think this is that appealing to me. So there's other guys that I would go with, and I can dig into that and some of the options that make sense. But I'm curious if you guys disagree with the Eric Bieniemy perspective there.
Yeah, no, I don't think Bieniemy is going to go. I mean, like you said, the alma mater always has a certain pull, and he is close with their athletic director, Rick George. So maybe he decides, you know, damn it, I want to go save, you know, my school. But I think that if he's just career focused, I don't think it would be the best move career wise. Because like you said, I think the only reason Eric Bieniemy doesn't have an NFL head coaching job right now is that the Chiefs went one Super Bowl. I think that kind of impacted his ability to interview for other jobs. So it's kind of ironic that the reason he's so wanted is because of how well they did, but how well they did kind of kept him from getting a job. But I think if Kansas City loses in the AFC Championship game, Bieniemy's probably got a head coaching job somewhere right now. So I think that the Chiefs are going to still be good next year because they still have Patrick Mahomes. So he's still going to be a name that is in the running for NFL head coaching jobs last year because he's of the success he's had and the fact that Andy Reid assistants tend to move on. There's tons of them all over the place right now. So I have a hard time thinking that if the Colorado job is offered to him, and I have a hard time thinking it won't be, I just don't know that he's going to look at that and say, this is the right move for me.
Yeah. I feel like out of the last 10 times that we've had the no-brainer, mama come home, you know, alma mater, or maybe I was a former assistant there. I feel like out of the last 10 times that we've tried to draw those kinds of connections in a situation like this, it's only actually happened maybe two or three times. That often it makes for it makes for better stories. And we sort of go with like, well, of course that makes sense. Like, let's go do this. Not really taking into consideration the multiple complicating factors that might be preventing someone like Eric Bieniemy to make that jump. Is the Colorado head coaching job better than Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator job?
I mean, it pays more. But is it a bet? I don't know. How do you define better? I guess a head coaching job.
I think that there's the Kansas City offensive coordinator job, besides pay, leads to better opportunities than the Colorado head coaching job does.
Well, I mean, yeah.
Because Bieniemy could be like the head coach of the Chargers at this time next year.
Right. And, that's fair. Yes.
And what is the Colorado job? Like, the Colorado job is steeped.
It's a mid to lower level job in the worst conference in the college football.
In the Power Five.
Power Five, sorry.
Right. You're so easy.
I was going to say the Sun Belt and Conference USA were like, yeah, that's right.
Flames. But yeah, it is not top half of the Pac-12. And the Pac-12 is currently running fifth among the Power Five conferences. And I just think that you've got more. I think opportunities is definitely a big part of this, but I mean, you're also coaching for Andy Reid. You've got a great quarterback. There's a lot that I think makes the entire experience, outside of whatever you would feel in terms of being able to take total ownership and building up the program. And that's all projection. Like, that, what Colorado fans that are screaming for Eric Bieniemy right now are projecting their own love of Colorado onto a former player that they loved, and just sort of hoping or believing that he has those same passions and he has those same goals to build Colorado back into the triumph of yesteryear. I mean, we do this game, the mailbag. Our listeners are always putting in like, all right, Miami, Nebraska, Tennessee, Florida State, like, who's going to be the next program that was good to get back to being great? Like, Colorado is even like two software updates ago. Like, it's a whole, like, wouldn't you say it's even a whole era from those schools that we talk about from the mid-90s? Best years?
It's been a long time since Cordell Stewart and, guys like that were running Colorado. Because, I mean, we've talked about it, too, in a mailbag where we were asked about, like, programs that we have a soft spot for. And Colorado is that program that I have a soft spot for, because growing up, when I was first starting to watch college football, that Nebraska-Colorado game was one of the few that was on TV every single year, and I would watch it, and I just really liked everything about Colorado. So I hope they hire a good coach, and I hope they get back to being good, because I like Colorado, and it's more fun to be when they're doing well. But I just don't think that right now, when you look at the landscape and you look at the Pac-12 and how everything's built up there and the kind of way that things are getting separated, that this is the most attractive job. I don't think they can do what Michigan State just did and throw that kind of package at somebody to lure them away from a Power Five job. I think if they're going to hire a coach that's had Power Five experience before, it's going to be somebody that A, either isn't coaching right now, like a Butch Jones, or B, somebody who, you know, isn't really is it used to be a Power Five coach, but maybe is now at the Group of Five, like a Jim McElwain, or somebody like Derek Mason, who was a candidate for the gig last year before Tucker got the job, and now finds himself with an AD that just resigned, and he's kind of on the hot seat himself. So maybe it's
Derek
time for
Mason would run to Colorado right now.
That's what I'm saying. It's just, will Colorado be really interested in a guy who just went 3-9? So I don't know.
All right, Barton.
I know who Barton's into because I saw him tweeting about it.
Yeah. Well, so first of all, I'm always interested in like I went to our Buff Stampede site, our Colorado site on 24/7 Sports, just to sort of see what the vibe is there, you know, who they want, things like that. And man, there's a lot of despair. It's a desolate place right now. There's just because like if you're like basically you had a coach that wasn't even like a baller. Yeah, might be, but what hadn't even proven to be this like, you know, monster hire, and you lose him because just a team paid him sort of the going rate for big time college football that you can't match, and you lose him after signing day, and so there's definitely like a vibe of like, man, who the hell could we get? Like, there's a lot of you know, pessimism, it seems, among the Colorado fan base as to kind of who they could get. And so, and I think the reality of who Colorado can get right now, like, you're not going to get a sitting Power Five head coach. Like Tom said, maybe if you want to go make a run at Derek Mason, you could probably get him, but do you want a coach that just went 3-9? I could argue probably Derek Mason is a better fit at Colorado than he is at Vanderbilt. And he might be more successful there. So, hey, maybe you do take a swing. But I think more likely your options are get a Group of Five head coach or go get another strong coordinator. And most of the strong coordinators out there, it seems, are, to me, on the defensive side. So, you know, who is that? Like Dan Lanning at Georgia, you could run it back. Same thing. Brent Venables at Clemson, you ain't getting him. Clark Lee at Notre Dame. Maybe Jim Leonard at Wisconsin. I mean, that's his home base.
Trade one Wisconsin defensive back for another.
That's right. Mike Elko at A&M. You know, he seems pretty like geographically agnostic. Alex Grinch at Oklahoma. That makes some sense. He's coached at Washington State and knows the Pac-12 landscape. So, I think any of those guys, if you can get them, probably be pretty decent hire. But I think more likely if I'm Colorado, I'm probably hiring Troy Calhoun at Air Force. And if Troy Calhoun doesn't get this Colorado job, because this is one of those coaches that's constantly just sort of like, you know, and also maybe this guy on the cot list. You know, you got the big the John Gruden's up there, and then you got the, you know, the more realistic candidates, and then the sort of the sleeper candidate. And Troy Calhoun's sort of been the sleeper candidate on every hot board for seems like a decade. But this one makes sense. I mean, look, A, he just beat Colorado this year with Air Force.
10-win season, right?
11 wins.
11 wins.
And he is, I think you could, and he runs the option, but he has a much more diverse, robust background than that because he's been an offensive coordinator in the NFL under Gary Kubiak, been an assistant, maybe coordinator with the Broncos.
As we saw this year too with like Air Force, when he has the right personnel, I mean, Air Force was still at like a flex bone option team this year.
But they threw it.
They were throwing a lot.
Like, yeah.
He could open things up when he has the right personnel for it.
And I think the whole thing, like at Colorado, okay, like what are you, like what can you be? How can you beat people? And I think that a way Colorado can beat people is, yeah, I guess you can go try to recruit Texas and California and you know, do what everyone else is doing and be athletic and, yeah, build it that way. I guess you can shoot for that. But I think that there's a lane for Colorado just develop at a really high level, maximize their talent, be really disciplined, and win that way, and get a coach that's not, you know, looking for the next job. And I think Troy Calhoun, just like, it just seems to fit. Like, this is, if there's a Power Five job that's going to happen for Troy Calhoun, this one just seems to make sense to me.
This is looking back at the reasons why, you know, we were talking about the timing is really tough for Michigan State to make the hire. You know, how do you leave right after the recruiting class at this point in the strength and conditioning program? But as those same concerns pop up, I look at the Troy Calhoun pitch and I'm like, well, I mean, recruiting at Air Force at the academy is a little bit different than at Cincinnati. It's not like he is, if he were leaving, it would be a big loss for Air Force. But I mean, isn't that sort of a different, you're looking for different kinds of guys, different kinds of players. Was it OKGs, but like the Air Force version of it, like the military version of it. It doesn't seem as though while his absence would certainly be disruptive given the program that he's built up and the success that they've had, it just doesn't to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem to have that same kind of ripple effect from the like recruiting aspect of this.
Ripple effect at Air Force?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
I would think that if Calhoun leaves, whoever the offensive coordinator is becomes Air Force's head coach.
Right. Like I don't the carousel stops there. I don't know who is the associate head coach on that staff or whatever, but I would guess that they've got a succession plan in place.
That's the way this goes. All right, who else?
I think Chris Creighton is another one I would throw in there. Tom, go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I put together a candidates list. I put Calhoun was on there. I put Brian Hartson as a name that they would probably target, but is not something, I mean, considering that he's turned down other jobs before, I can't see Colorado, particularly in February, being the job that Hartson finally decides to leave Boise for. You mentioned other coordinators on the defensive side. One on the offensive side that could, you know, be good and also weaken one of your division rivals, Graham Harrell.
Ooh. Yeah, that'd be fun just for the continued chaos at Southern Cal.
Mm-hmm. And then I mentioned Butch Jones, Jim Levitt, you mentioned Derek Mason, Jim McElwain, Sarkisian maybe. He's got plenty of Pac-12 experience, obviously. And then if you look on their current staff, you know, the Tyson Summers, defensive coordinator, has head coaching experience at Georgia Southern. Was not great head coaching experience, seeing as how they fired him in the middle of the second year, but that wasn't really as much about Tyson Summers as a coach as much as it was a fit because he wasn't running an option and Georgia Southern wanted to run the option, or at least their fans wanted him to. Jay Johnson, Mel Tucker's offensive, he was the offensive analyst at Georgia, came to Colorado with Tucker as the offensive coordinator, has plenty of offensive coordinator experience at the college level, has never been a head coach. And then Darren Chiaverini, who's the assistant head coach at Colorado, wide receivers coach, was there before Tucker, has been there since 2016, and has been considered like one of the top recruiters on the staff. So maybe if you wanted to stay on staff, that's somebody you could consider going with. But it's not like a list of names out there where it's like, oh, yeah, that's the guy we got to get.
Well, because also if this job was open as four other jobs were open, it was probably going to be the fourth job that we mentioned on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Like if we're getting together to talk about the coaching carousel on December 1st and there's a handful of jobs open, then we've probably worked our way all the way down here. You mentioned the Brian Hartson thing. I only find that interesting because if I don't think it will happen, I agree with you, but if Brian Hartson were to leave, that would certainly provide a new wrinkle for what seemed like a squashed beef. I guess we didn't talk about it much on the podcast here, but Boise State's relationship with the Mountain West was tenuous there for a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
We had some competing lawsuits and briefs filed as the Mountain West is trying to sort of iron out what the future of its media rights look like. Boise State, in the last media rights negotiation, was able to carve out its own payment and sort of its own special place in the media rights deal that included a relationship with ESPN that didn't necessarily extend all the way to the rest of the conference. And, you know, I think we weren't really sure if we were going to see another little batch of conference realignment or if, you know, what was going to happen. But all of it seems to have been settled. Beef has been squashed. Mountain West Commissioner Craig Thompson's done that a few times now during his tenure in college athletics. But if Brian Harsin were to leave Boise State for Colorado, I would consider that a new wrinkle in that ongoing offseason story. But I agree with you that in general, that doesn't seem like the job that he'd be looking to move for.
Yeah, because off the top of your heads, do you even consider Colorado a better job than Boise State?
I think off the top of my head, I think they're competitive, equal.
But to that point, Tom, is like, look, if Brian Harsin really wants to send a message in a bottle and toss it out to sea and say, hey, I'm game to leave, he can wait till next cycle and probably get a pretty good job. I'm not sure Colorado's the one he jumps for.
Boise State is probably going to be winning 10 games and competing for the Mountain West Championship for the next 4 years.
Yeah, and all he has to do is wave the flag to his agent and say, hey, you know, let him know. And Brian Harsin gets calls from, I bet, some pretty big-time programs.
Anything else from this hire that stands out, or any other lingering thoughts on the Colorado job?
Just that bad news for the Pac-12, and now that both Mississippi State and Michigan State, two programs that are all in other Power 5 conferences but are not, you know, top tier in those Power 5 conferences, were able to come into your conference and just, you know, pluck your head coach away with money.
Yeah, Pac-12 just continues to get dunked on.
It's like a coaching farm system at this point. Like, if you do well in the Pac-12, unless you're at like Oregon or USC, every other Power 5 program out there is realizing now, like, eh, we can get that guy.
Yeah, and Mike Leach like tried to get out last year, and just a year later he gets out. Sorry, man. Tough time to be Pac-12 commissioner right now.
Are y'all really going all doom and gloom on the Pac-12?
How are you spinning this positive on the Pac-12?
I this sounds disrespectful, but I don't have the expectation that the Pac-12 is playing the same game as everyone else. And I think that is somewhat of a decision that's been made among probably the Pac-12 university leadership, like all the university presidents, because if you were to sit around, and I understand we've made this joke a few times, but like seriously, if you were to sit and watch, you know, a week of Pac-12 Network, you would not feel that football is prioritized. And if you watch a week of the SEC Network, you understand what's paying the bills.
I get that, but I don't buy it, because we got to remember when the Pac-12, when the network first started and they went through all this and they got all that money, they got Rich Rod, they got Leach, they made all these big time hires with the newfound money that they'd had coming into their coffers from the network. And we thought, hey, look, the Pac-12 is ready to play ball now. But now in the year since then, we've seen the other conferences surpass the Pac-12 as far as their revenue goes, whereas the Pac-12 is kind of stuck in what's looking, you know, like what they're getting, like 30 something million a year, while the SEC and the Big Ten teams are getting like 50 to 60 million a year. That's a huge gap. And now that these other conferences have far more money than the Pac-12, they're going in and they're rating their coaches, and the Pac-12 is not really replacing that with anybody because they can't afford to play ball. So I think that, yeah, the Pac-12 right now is not in a great position. And I don't think it's just that they emphasize their Olympic sports more than some of the other conferences do, and they do.
They are very proud to be the conference of champions in all the very high-minded ideals and values that come along with that.
Exactly. But, I mean, let's look – if you look at the conference, here's one – maybe this is too simplistic, but their premier football program in history has been USC. Look at the condition USC football program is in. Their premier basketball program historically, their blue blood, UCLA. Look at the condition that's in. So in the two major revenue sports, their two blue blood programs are in awful shape right now. And I think that reflects the conference as a whole.
Barton, any final thoughts?
No.
Hire Troy Calhoun.
Well, yeah, final thought is there is no transfer portal in the real world We've learned that lesson the hard way. The transfer portal in the real world.
Oh, man. All right, Colorado. Good luck. You're on the clock. Our next
rooting for you.
Yeah, rooting for you. We'll be back. We will be back next week on Monday. Another edition of the Mailbag Headlines and our second edition of the Cover 3 Book Club. Glad you all enjoyed it. You can follow him on Twitter at Barton Simmons. You can follow him at Tom Fornelli. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
When something happens to your kitchen, you might say,
"This is ludicrous."
But that won't fix your home. That will only get you the rapper, Ludicrous.
Having trouble? Don't panic. Don't be alarmed. You need to file a claim? Holla at State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
That's right. You can file a claim on the app or call us.
Thanks, Mr. Chris.
No matter how ludicrous the situation, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
State Farm, Bloomington, Illinois.